critics are describing Joker, director Todd Phillips' psychological thriller, as toxic and irresponsible. The new film stars Joaquin Phoenix as Joker, a mentally unstable stand-up comedian who becomes an anti-hero to the working class of trash-infested Gotham City after killing three Wall Street types on a city train who are taunting him with Sondheim's show tune, Send In the Clowns.
Joker avoids the look and feel of traditional comic book blockbuster films, but instead draws on classic films like The King of Comedy and Taxi Driver in order to explore the real inequalities in modern-day America. Today, we take a look at Todd Phillips' new film, Joker, and how folks like Martin Scorsese and Jennifer Aniston think superhero blockbuster films are destroying Hollywood.
Plus, Naomi Campbell says designers have been begging her for decades to trip and fall on the runway.
Blippi, the child's entertainment YouTube star with a scatological past, who's making parents furious with his touring live show featuring a Blippi impersonator.
And are folks really shocked that Ellen likes Bush? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Send in the clowns, those Laffy Daffy clowns. Send in those soulful and doleful schmaltz by the bowlful clowns. Send in the clowns.
That's actually not Stephen Sondheim, but Stephen Sondheim's song as sung by Krusty the Clown in The Simpsons.
Does Krusty actually sing it?
Yeah, and every time I think about that song, I'm thinking about Krusty's version, uh-huh. The Simpsons version, as opposed to the Stephen Sondheim version.
Aww.
Send in the clowns. Mm-hmm. That Barbara Streisand and Frank Sinatra and Judy Garland, everyone sung that song.
Do you know the meaning behind the song?
It means, I know that it's an old circus and theatrical meaning when everything goes wrong, when audiences just fail to be entertained. Mm-hmm. You can always rely on superficial, canned, foolish content like this show to entertain and delight audiences.
Yeah.
The clowns. You send in the clowns when everything goes wrong.
Yeah. So when you're failing in the theater, you send in the song, you send in the clowns, and they lighten everything up. But this, you know, this is from a musical that he wrote called A Little Night Music. And it's kind of referencing that kind of aspect, but it's a woman talking about her love life. She's in love with this man and she decides that she wants to be with him. But he's been in love with her for years, but he's already married to somebody else.
So
I know. So it's kind of like an unrequited kind of love story.
And she begs him to break up with his wife and marry him. And he says no. And then that's when she sings it.
Oh, it's so sad.
I know. But it's a great, you know, song.
And I have to say, watching this in the theater, because this song is kind of what sets the Joker off. Spoiler alert.
Yes. He's lots of spoiler alerts. So
he's on a train ride. His comedy career is terrible. He's really feeling down in the dumps. He's been fired. He's sitting on the train. He sees this woman. She's getting kind of bullied by these three Wall Street types, right? And we don't know if he's actually seeing this or not, because there's a lot in this movie is like, did this really happen? Is this real? Or is he just, you know, psychologically, is he mentally unstable? And so he's seeing things. And so he sees these three guys bully the women. He starts laughing uncontrollable because he's the Joker and he's got a problem with that. He just has a medical condition where he just laughs and laughs and laughs. We know a lot of people that are like that. People you don't necessarily want to sit in front of in
not
the theater.
Not me.
You know, I have a very decent laugh. But He sees this happening. He starts laughing. The woman gets up. And then all of a sudden, these guys start coming towards him. And then there's this one guy who's, you know, they're all dressed like, you know, they work on Wall Street. And one of them is really, he's kind of sexy. And he starts singing, like, sending the clowns to him.
To Joaquin Phoenix.
To Joaquin Phoenix, who's sitting there. And he's kind of, like, moving seductively. And he's hanging on the railings of the train. And you're just kind of like, is he bullying him? Is he coming on to him? Is a little bit of both, and you're just kind of like, oh, it's very confusing. So in some ways I think that maybe, you know, the Joker's first kill might have been a little bit of a gay panic.
Oh, at being flirted with by a drunk person. Well, it was like they were bullying him. They were using homosexuality to taunt
And
him.
How many of us, we've all been bullied by these Broadway show queens at some point in time, where they sing some kind of song. And let's be honest, you do want to kill them sometimes.
I've been bullied more by Wall Street types than Broadway show tunes queens. And, you know, but the anger mix. And the feelings
sometimes
are there.
Sometimes they mix. You know what I mean?
But certainly, you know, Todd Phillips' film, Joker, that is getting a lot of press because this is a gritty reimagining of the classic Batman comic book supervillain, the Joker. They're dropping the article the. And this time, they're really speaking to our modern angst and feelings of inequality, of oligarchies, of mob rules, of bad, corrupt politicians, and us as underdogs feel like we're lost at sea. And so Joaquin Phoenix's Joker rises in this ocean of inequality and despair.
But he's not like a mastermind of it all or anything.
No,
like that.
He's just an accidental tourist.
Yeah, it's all very unintentional in some senses. And I mean, eventually he has some kind of idea of where he's going with this.
He has an awakening
about
it.
But at first, it's just kind of like, you know, you don't seek out greatness. Sometimes greatness is bestowed upon you.
And he's an incel superhero. And people were rightfully concerned that this film was going to inspire shootings or violence in the same way that the other Batman film, which actually did not inspire that shooting in the movie theater with the guy with the color hair.
In Aurora, Colorado.
In Aurora. He actually, that was a myth perpetuated by, you know, corporate media and later on experts and
to sell the movie
and basically like, oh my god, this is like the whole reason this movie is being made is because of these horrible people and corporations are destroying us and destroying our culture and destroying our lives. And in some ways it's really interesting to see this film Joker being made because it's really speaking to the feelings of people like Jennifer Aniston, who's saying that these comic book blockbuster films done by Marvel Comics and Star Wars and Disney and all of them are destroying Hollywood, is destroying our culture, destroying our ability to tell stories and to bring out the humanity. So I thought it was really interesting that they stepped back and told the Joker as this almost anti-hero art film, whereas there's no special effects, just practical effects with someone being stabbed. And it's all about the feelings and distortion of this person's psyche and body. And Joaquin Phoenix, this is directed by Todd Phillips, who also did Lady Gaga's Star is Born, uses Send in the Clowns more than Shallow did. You know, say this is all over the movie.
Right? Yeah.
And I think it's really an interesting film. I think it's one of the top films of the year and definitely everybody should definitely go run out and see it because it is dramatically and light years different from every other superhero or comic book film ever made.
It is my favorite Batman movie ever, I have to say, I think.
You know, there's also, if you look at the film from the lens of race, every character that is either sympathetic or has with the exception of the little person, are all women of color in this film. And I think that may have been intentionally so. And he murders them off screen. So we don't get to see his violence towards women of color as an incel anti-hero.
Erasure? Is that what you think it is?
I don't know if the filmmakers are like conscious even of that, of their own race, internalized racism, or they're trying to comment on it very intentionally or indirectly. But like it's inferred that he's having psychological moments where he's in having a relationship with the next door neighbor. And then there's another scene where we're revealed that actually it all took place in his mind. And then later on, the way he stumbles down the hallway infers that he murdered her and her child. We don't know for sure. But then later in the film, it's made more clear that he's doing this kind of behavior over and over again. We just don't get to see it. So in a lot of ways, Joker is actually a very rare film that portrays a villain as an anti-hero, as a sympathetic character that makes us want to identify with him and also understands why he's going through those things that he does. And I really think in some ways it's a very great film and a refreshing departure from the other films.
Well, you know, he speaks with these women of color that he talks to primarily. There's a neighbor that he's obsessed with, but then there's a social worker you see in the beginning and then a social worker towards the end. But you also have an idea of maybe, you know, when he first talks to the social worker, how he talks about how he used to be in a mental institute.
Institution.
And later at the end of the movie, you find him in a mental institution. So you kind of ask yourself, did he ever really leave? Was he ever even out? Did any of this even happen? So there's a lot of questions about what's even real in this film. Like, what were his experiences? Because you're seeing it through his point of view. He's, you know, he's the narrator, but that narration is deeply flawed because you don't know what's what.
It's great that they cast Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, because the film, you know, high point is his appearance on a talk show as an awkward talk show host guest.
Yes.
And in real life, Joaquin Phoenix had a very awkward appearance on David Letterman when he had a full beard and just did not cooperate with the conventions of a talk show.
Right. And that was, what was that all about? He was preparing for a role or something? He was trying to show something?
I'm not sure exactly what happened. It might have been a lapse of mental judgment on Joaquin Phoenix's part, or thought that was going to be funny. But, you know, and sometimes David Letterman, like us and other talk shows, doesn't really vet or prepare their guests very much. And one thing we certainly related to was a moment where you grabbed me and were howling in the movie.
I grabbed Fausto's leg because I was just like,
the Joker is angry at the fact that he's been invited to go on a talk show and talk about himself. And we're like, man, welcome to my world. Why does that moment speak to you so much?
Well, first of all, there's a scene early on where he's in a children's hospital and he is he's lip syncing to something.
Dress up as a clown, entertaining kids.
Lip sync, and I was just like, oh my god, this is drag. This, you know,
he's a drag queen.
In many ways, he's a drag queen because you know, drag queens are clowns, and you know, there's a certain aspect to it.
Drag queens are marginalized. Drag queens aren't respected usually unless they're on television, and drag queens are always hustling for gigs. And that don't pay them well or don't treat them well.
And he's kind of like in this clown room with some other clowns before, and they're all painting their faces, and so it's very reminiscent of that kind of
backstage at RuPaul's Drag Race. Or
like they're in the Interior Illusions Lounge or something like that.
Well, if you've ever been backstage at a drag show where the drag queens get ready at the club, there is a you know, you can see some of those scenes in Cooking with Drag Queens.
Coming this week, we have an episode out.
Yes, with Jade and Monica Beverly Hills. And the atmosphere behind the scenes at a lot of these clubs reminds me of the scenes in Joker where the performers are slapping on heavy makeup on them and talking about how they're not respected in society and they're marginalized people.
So he's sitting on the couch. It's Robert De Niro. He plays the talk show host. He's Johnny Carson type character. This is set in 1981. And so he's Robert De Niro is questioning him about his comedy and his what he's doing and stuff. And he's just so he's mad at him because he invited him on the talk show to talk about a video that he did where he did stand up and it failed. Basically,
it bombed on stage.
It bombed on stage and people had shared it and he was kind of like making fun of him. And then he's like invited him to come on the show to talk about it. And how many times is like, has that been our premise of having somebody on the podcast? Not necessarily because it like whatever they did bombed, but that they were a YouTube person and then there was some kind of virality to it that people were attracted to it.
You know, unintentional consequences.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking of Mimi Plastique, who is a transgender woman and also drag performer in Chicago, who was on the train and having an altercation with somebody who was harassing her. And normally those altercations, the person, you know, walks away or runs away. She stood her ground and she's shaking a little jar of a spray of mace and be like, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's get off at Jarvis.
I'm getting off at Jarvis. I'll see you at Jarvis.
Let's go to Jarvis. We'll take it down. And that thing went everywhere, went viral. And I ran into Mimi Plastique at a club, and I went up to her and said, we would love to talk to you on the show about that experience and just the violence that trans women go through. And you know, anybody who's gender nonconforming when taking public transportation. And she's like, I just want to move past that. You know, that was a very difficult moment in my life, and I got a lot of negative backlash for it. And that's the thing, is as a marginalized person, when you stand up for yourself in a public space, especially on the internet, you're not necessarily going to get appreciated and celebrated by your peers in your marginalized community. Sometimes they're like, you're the reason that you're holding us back. You know, that's something that we experience, is like, because our unapologetic desire to have universal health care, to end wars overseas, to give people universal access to education, to close concentration camps in the United States with the ICE detention centers. Because we bring up these issues, and, you know, violence against trans women, mainstream organizations like HRC and GLAAD and people associated with them sees us as pariahs in LGBT news media. And so we understand what it's like to be marginalized by your own community when we stand up for our own rights and our desires for a better world publicly.
Yeah, because a lot of people are just like, listen, you have to toe the corporate line. And so so with him sitting there on the couch talking, you know, Robert De Niro here, he's giving him the opportunity. And in many ways, this is like, okay, you bombed on the stage, but, you know, now is your opportunity to shine. Show the world what you have, your side of the story, what's happening there.
And I thought they handled it well.
Yeah. And so he's, you know, and he's very resentful of it. He resented the opportunity to showcase himself. And I've felt that from some talent.
And what do you think is stemming from that, like, psychology or mindset when a guest is angry at you for giving them opportunity to be heard and understood?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think it's on them more than anything. I think it's like their own sense of insecurity.
It's internalized trauma. So it's not that right now there's people, the audience and us, who are quietly listening to what they have to say and following up to make sure we understand them. They're basing their current experience on past trauma, where they've been humiliated or ridiculed. And they're imposing that on this present day scenario with us. And so they get very triggered by the experience of being heard, whether it's in front of a therapist or on a program like ours. The only difference is that with us, the public has access to it. Anybody can listen to it. And so it opens them up, and it's a very vulnerable place to be. And, you know, I think for us, like, we've been doing the show for so long that we've forgotten, in some ways, just like a person who's come out of the closet, forgot what it's like to be in the closet, to be fearful. And you know, it's really important to remember that fear and speak to it and assure the guests and the person who is in a vulnerable situation that we're going to together overcome it. We got your back. We are not alone, and we're here to listen to you and support you and celebrate you.
And, you know, and my goal to have a guest on the show is to understand where they're coming from, to understand what's happening there. It's not, you know, I mean, certainly you can poke gentle fun of things, but it's also, I'm not here to, like, ridicule anyone. I'm not here to torment anybody or to hold somebody up and be like, look at this asshole.
You know? That's not who we are about.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think, I mean, sometimes we do want to draw attention to people who are misunderstood and certainly, you know, bring out the humanity. You know, I'm kind of like Mary Poppins. I see the good in everyone. You know, that was what bothered me about Mary Poppins Returns.
Yeah.
Is that Mary Poppins was...
She had enemies.
And Mary Poppins is able to, in the classic Mary Poppins, is able to see through the dark exteriors and bring out the light.
Oh, just like everybody. Alan.
Just like
we'll get to that.
We'll get to that in a second. Okay. What is nihilism exactly? It's a philosophy that nothing matters.
Nothing matters, that it's all going to end in death and destruction, right?
That both sides, there are only two sides, and both sides are the same in different ways, but they cancel each other out, that life has no meaning. And so in a lot of ways, Joker becomes a nihilist anti-hero. He's somebody who speaks to this feeling that taking the only solution is destruction, is violence, mm-hmm. because nothing else can be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I love about the film, I think, is, you know, watch growing up on Batman lore and you see Cesar Romero, you see Jack Nicholas, you see these guys, you don't really understand their motivation, why mm-hmm. they're so bad, why they're so evil. But I think also most importantly is like how they even attracted these henchmen. Like what was their message that these people were like, I want to get in on this act. I want to, you know, be part of this mob rule. And you really see how that the foundation for something like that is laid out for in this film. You can see why somebody might be attracted to somebody like the Joker and his, you know, his cause.
Yeah. You know, I just think it's a great film. There's a lot of anxiety in terms of the critics. I think that, you know, we live in a moment with a lot of inequality and a lot of political unrest. You know, 60% of Americans feel like our country has been hijacked and taken over by a malevolent force, the Republicans. And might not ever get it back. Mm. We might not be able to overcome it in this next election. And what happens next? Is the future of Gotham City our future? Are we going to be, you know, devolving into chaos? Living in trash and squalor, you know?
So giant rats.
So it's something that's interesting. You know, certainly Ellen DeGeneres has sparked an outrage over posting on social media and her talk show host and on our talk show because she was photographed with former President George W. Bush at a basketball game.
Football, I think, right?
Or at a sports game where they were sat next to each other. Mm-hmm. And then she went and said, well, you know what? He is my friend. And I, you know, just because we don't, and I say this on the show, just because we don't agree on the same things doesn't mean we can't be friends. And I do believe that. However, if you're a war criminal, if your actions resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of innocent people, it's very difficult to be friends with somebody mm-hmm. like that.
Mm.
And it makes me question why Ellen recently has been an apologist for regressive, for dark people with difficult histories and who are not willing to grow and apologize for their past actions.
Mm.
I could be friends with George W. Bush if George Bush goes to jail and serves time for his war crimes. Then yes, we absolutely could be friends. I'll visit you at jail and bring you a cake and mm-hmm. look at your paintings from prison. But George W. Bush belongs in prison.
Mm.
For he does not belong comfortable in a little chair next to Ellen DeGeneres sipping tea and stuff pictures. Like that.
Who is the better artist, Adolf Hitler or George Bush? Has anybody ever done a comparison of who is the better painter?
Well, I think actually, you know, George W. Bush is a interesting artist and speaks to, you know, his past mm-hmm. as somebody who was complicit in mm-hmm. instrumental in starting wars that have never yeah. been ended. And just so many things that we're dealing with today. We have Trump mm-hmm. because of Trump.
It's the Bush family legacy, though. Yeah. You know, his grandfather, great-grandfather, they made a ton of money selling war machines to the Nazis. And his father was involved in wars.
Prescott,
you know?
Bush.
Yeah, you know, and then he's involved in wars. For a lot of these people, it's their big moneymaker.
War is death. Death is mm-hmm. a moneymaker for George mm-hmm. W. Bush. By Ellen apologizing for it, she's basically supporting a death machine.
Well, she's also, you know, she's a corporate spokesman. I mean, she's a cover girl for, you know, Cover Girl Cosmetics, and she's 60-some years old.
I think anybody can be a cover yeah. girl for any makeup.
And I'm just saying, you know, that's great, but it's also, too, you know, Ellen's in the business of selling older people, because that's mainly who watches her show. I think it's, you know, retirees. My mother, who's in her 90s, watches that kind
seniors
of show.
Seniors
at home. And so she's dealing with a very regressive population for the most part. I mean, you know, show there's lesbians and gay guys out there who are like, oh, I love Ellen and stuff like that. But it's like, how often do you really watch the show? Yeah, you probably want to be a guest on Ellen, but do you really actually watch her show?
They don't. You but the idea of...
She's selling toilet paper. You know what I mean? She's like, that's the kind of thing. She's just a corporate spokesperson.
They trust Ellen to... Mm-hmm. listen and hear them and be understood and not be made into fools.
Mm.
James Baldwin said, We can disagree and still love each other. Unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist.
Yeah.
We've known about Ellen. I've met Ellen back in 1991 at a nightclub, and I talked to her for just a brief moment. And I thought she was a very attractive, very intelligent, very good comedian that one day would rule the world if she just decided to come out as a lesbian. And Ellen DeGeneres did change the world for the better by coming out as a lesbian to try to save her struggling television show. Mm. She came out like Ricky Martin for personal gain, but the consequence was that it benefited a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any problem with that at all. But who Ellen is today, and people are asking, why are we talking about Ellen? It's like Trump sitting in the office and all this other stuff. You know, there's so much bigger problems. Why do you care about Ellen?
Yeah,
because Ellen is relevant because people listen to her. People follow her advice, follow her lead.
And in 10 years, is Ellen going to be sitting next to Donald Trump and acting like, what? We're friends.
Dancing like a moron again? But Ellen's dancing stupid.
She says she regrets starting it. She wished she had never started doing
it. I regret looking at it. I want pads. It's like, I'm also guilty of this, you know, mm-hmm. like singing at the beginning to pad the show, you know.
Well, the thing is, though, too, is, you know, with that is if you're a conservative person, you're going to appreciate Ellen. Yeah. You're going to appreciate her saying, we can still be friends. You know, if you're progressive, you're just going to be like, you know, George Bush needs to pay.
It's hard to laugh now without feeling like Joaquin Phoenix.
Like you're a maniac.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't laugh anymore without feeling like I'm crazy.
Well, you know, I think sometimes people's laughter is a real look into their psyche.
It's laughter and a smile evolved from animals showing their teeth to show, you know, like a dog growling at you, that they're scared or on the defensive. Laughter evolved as a way to dealing with tension and violence.
Mm.
So there is a psychological tie there. And, you know, I think Joaquin Phoenix's Joker is beautifully exploring that very grim origins of something that we think is very lighthearted.
I really like the way because he's really skinny for this role too. I really like the way his body moved. There was a lot of weird dance kind of scenes and movements, and you're just like, oh, this is just so wonderful. Because you do see people on the streets that are, you know, that are suffering from some kind of, you know, mental illness or whatever, that are just like, they're singing and they're dancing and they're having a good time. But then all of a sudden they can also just kind of like turn and get really weird.
Show business is a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it comes to entertaining people, a lot of us dream of overcoming our marginalized existence, our struggles, by posting up content on YouTube and hoping that it's going to mean something to somebody and it's going to send us to the stratosphere. You remember the Harlem Shake?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Con lo terrorista. Tiki, tiki, tiki.
You know? And somebody dancing, then all of a sudden there's a whole room of people dancing, yeah?
And, you know, everybody did their own version. We didn't, but there was a lot of people who did one. And a young filmmaker who currently goes by the name Blippi. He is, his origins was as a very gruesome YouTube video where he was the Harlem Shake poop, where he pooped on his friend under the name Steezy Grossman.
Mm.
The video actually did have viral success. And, you know, Stephen Johns, who he changed his name to Stephen Johns recently, has had incredible, his explosive success.
Not just with the diarrhea.
Not just with, as Blippi, a popular kids entertainer who brings in an estimated $1.6 million a month making videos that appeal to four-year-olds.
Oh my God, Fausto, we're in the wrong business. $1.6 million a month?
Can you guys say 1.6? That's great. We're making a lot of money. Make sure your mom and dad buy tickets to see my live show coming soon to a town near you.
But I won't
That's how he talks. Yeah. Is he really? He's not going to be there.
So the parents are pissed because, like, some parents are like, they bought like four tickets, and between the tickets and the meet and greet, it's like you're spending like $400 some.
They're not mad because they found out that he has a past as a scatological viral star.
It's kids like poop. What can you say?
And the parent, if you're having a kid, you're being sprayed with poop already. But they're mad because he's not going to be there. Mm-hmm. He's hiring an actor to play him. And to go on tour because he's busy spending his money and running his media empire.
Mm.
I said, that is brilliant. You know, I actually went and watched a lot of Blippi's videos. And at first I was like, I hate this guy. He speaks condescendingly to kids. It's, you know, spam for babies. It's junk food for the toddler set. It's not helping kids develop emotionally or functionally. It's just filler for parents who are overwhelmed raising their kids, and they shove their media devices in front of their kids' faces to just quiet them down while their mommy and daddy are, you know, running errands to the bank. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I think it's okay. Blippi's okay. I think Blippi is all right. I actually watched a lot of his videos, and he's not as condescending to kids as he could be. And he certainly has a profound love for losing himself in the eyes of a toddler and how the toddler sees the world, and giving the toddler what they want is just, you know, human interaction. And unfortunately, we live in a world where parents don't have the resources or time to spend with their kids. And YouTube is a rat's nest. It's a infested place where there's all kinds of horror and traumatizing content aimed at children. And, you know, Stephen John's videos are actually wholesome. They're there to entertain kids, to keep them busy. And that's all he's doing.
YouTube has a whole new like app and
for kids.
So people can kind of like, you know, I would never let like a 4 or 5 year old kid loose on YouTube because you never know what they're going to stumble upon. But, you know, you'd probably feel a lot more comfortable putting them on YouTube Kids and so they can explore that kind of stuff. You know, for us, it's weird because we do the show and we think of ourselves as a show for adults. But, you know, we do get emails and we know listeners who have started listening to us from like the time they were 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of wild to me. Now some of them are like 27, 28. Some of them are like getting married now. It's bizarre.
And I would never want to speak down to you guys, our audience, because I see you guys as equals with us. Mm-hmm. You're our community. You're our family. You're our friends. Mm. And I fear that when children's entertainers talk to kids, that they talk down to them. And kids aren't stupid, and kids know that they're being manipulated or unless they're extremely, extremely young, you know. And it is interesting, like, talking to kids who once loved Barney and Friends, when they grew out of it, they hated Barney and Friends. Mm. They felt like Barney and Friends was very manipulative. But for people who grew up on Sesame Street, for example, or Fraggle Rock, they have a profound appreciation and love for the gift that being kind and being understood and spoken to as equals that those children's television shows had for us. For every tripped out, weird, you know, what is it, Teletubbies or Boombah or even, you know, Peppa Pig,
Gabba Gabba Hey,
there's been really wonderful programming that influences me to this day, like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Mm. So, you know, I think Mr. Blippi is probably a little bit of a hybrid between that Barney and Friends superficial schmaltz, the Send in the Clowns. But there's also some wholesome Mr. Rogers quality where he gets on the eye level. He gets on the ground. He speaks directly to the kids. And I think that we need more people just speaking directly to their audience in that way. So I give it a thumbs up. And I think it's great that a scatological viral star is making $1.6 million a month. That's brilliant, you know?
That's the high-end estimate. It might only be $100,000 a month.
That gives hope for all of us. That gives hope for me, you know. It's like, and you, that we, even despite being LGBTQ, we can rise and succeed in anything that we do. I mean, we're not scatological viral stars. You know, not yet.
You know, we can still poop on each other.
Yeah. I poop on you.
You just take some chocolate pudding and put it up your butt and then you just spew it out on somebody.
Stephen John said in past interviews that was actual real feces and not like something that he put up
his
butt.
And it was intentional, right?
It was intentional. It was done. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, I got diarrhea. Come over here. Let me take my clothes off and let's film this. That's basically how it went. And they filmed it. And that was it. Aww. Wow. Naomi Campbell just did an interview with Vivienne Westwood. Boy, that's two divas of fashion in a room together, about her infamous Fall Vivienne 1993 runway show. So she was modeling for Vivienne Westwood, and she fell down.
She fell at the fall fashion show?
Yes. Okay. Wearing these crazy over-the-top heels. And, you know, Vivienne Westwood describes it as a gazelle falling. It was actually graceful and beautiful and nothing like, you know, the way you or I would fall if we were drunk wearing a pair of those crazy over the top heels. Since then, that moment, she says that over the decades, because we're now in 2019, designers have begged her to fall for them again, says, "That would be the greatest publicity we could have for our fashion line." Naomi Campbell responded, "Why would you want me to fall unnecessarily? Press? But that's not planned. That would be terrible. That goes against everything I stand for. These designers asked me if I would do it, and I would say, absolutely not. I'm not falling purposefully."
Yeah, because now things can go viral like never before. You know, it can just be everywhere for all the time. It'd be a gif that keeps on giving.
Or a gif that keeps on giving would be probably better.
Is that how it is? Do you say gif or
it's
gif?
It's spelled, pronounced like the peanut butter. Choosy moms choose gif. I think.
Is that how we pronounce the peanut butter.
I
think you can say it either way, but the guy who came up with it says it's supposed to be one way. I forget.
The peanut butter. That's how you remember.
Okay.
Yeah. Choosy moms choose gif. Okay. Like Annette Funicello.
The gif that keeps on gifing.
It doesn't work, but you know, you can always do.
That's the funny thing about
tomato,
it.
Tomato.
The LGBT
equality
forum. Unfortunately, Bernie couldn't be there because he had a heart attack. But we did get to see Joe Biden talk about 24 hours, go, go, go at the bathhouse in San Francisco.
Not that long ago.
You know?
I wasn't there. Why was I invited to Joe Biden's sex party?
Hunter Biden's sex party I might go to, or Joe was back in the day, but I don't know if I'd want to get with Joe now. Yeah. But I just think it's hysterical because then he's just like, you know, we have this image that it's 24 hours at the gay bathhouse, and I'm just like picturing him in his mind what he's seeing as he says that. But now, but then he goes on to be like, but now we see like queer people, you know, their marriages are lasting. They're committed to it. They want to be together. And I just thought it was like, oh my God. Just, you know,
it was great that Saturday Night Live parodied the whole thing with Billy Porter as, you know, pray tell from Pose, reading the candidates, announcing the candidates to filth. But the best award went to Diane Warren, Elizabeth Warren. Diane Warren is the musician who said, "If you don't want to be in a gay marriage, don't marry a man."
No, just if you believe a marriage between one man and one woman, just marry one woman. Don't marry more than that. You know. Yeah. But also too, it's like I'm surprised Saturday Night Live didn't touch on the whole gay bathhouse thing because it was so crazy and so ridiculous that it would come out of his mouth.
Well, I think they kind of did that with having him, you know, Woody Harrelson as Joe Biden kiss
Anderson Cooper
on the lips with tongue. I was like, anytime I see, you know, attractive celebrities on television, same-sex couples kissing each other, I'm cool with it. Face goes back into smartphone, types status update. There.
What?
That's my new meme. Like, okay. I'm cool with it. Lowers face into smartphone, types, continues typing. I think that's great, you know. I guess I'm just mad. I, I'm concerned that, you know, HRC and GLAAD are two of the very centrist. They're very, they've not always been had a history of supporting LGBTQ people. HRC famously fought against having trans inclusion in ENDA. And GLAAD notoriously endorsed the merger of AT&T and T-Mobile. So, you know, these nonprofit lobbying groups have had our best interests in mind in the past. Hopefully they're learning and adjusting into the future. But I'm weary about them, and I don't trust them.
HRC just launched like a partnership kind of in the same way as Lambda Legal, who has been at the forefront of fighting for equality in the court system. HRC is kind of getting into that area, too, on an international level, because I think that part of them, you know, we're going to have to do a lot of fighting in the courts. And for that's probably going to be a great way for them to fundraise, too. So,
well, listen, you know, it takes a lot of money, and only Bernie Sanders is the one who's getting like dollar donations from you and me and everybody else. You know, it takes a community to bring about change working together, and it's not easy to do these things. And, you know, I do want to create a space for Ellen, for HRC, for GLAAD to be better and to learn and apologize for the mistakes. Just because I don't agree with the way Ellen apologizes for war monsters doesn't mean that I can't someday be friends with Ellen.
That's true. Maybe someday.
One day I'll be like, boy, you remember me when we were met at Chances back in 1991? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, I had to wait in a long line to go pee.
We want to remind folks that Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and consider becoming a member today to help fund the show for the next year. And access thousands of legendary episodes with some of the most incredible, amazing LGBTQ artists in the world.
Right now, a lot of people's renewals for the subscription are going through. Some people's, unfortunately, are getting skipped. So if you get a message from PayPal and it says skipped, you might get another message that'll say skipped, and then eventually it will become suspended. So if you want to continue supporting Feast of Fun, contact PayPal and let them know, say, hey, just make sure that this payment goes through, because it'll get skipped if you changed your credit card or you don't have a balance or something going on there. So remember, we count on your support, and you supported us last year. We're hopefully we can count on your support going into this next year.
Amen. Cooking with Drag Queens is coming up this week with Jade Sotomayor and Monica Beverly Hills from RuPaul's Drag Race. We're going to be making beef empanadas with chimichurri sauce.
Yummy,
the recipe
yummy.
Will be posted on patreon.com/feastoffun. For just $3 a month, you can help support Cooking with Drag Queens and access some of the recipes from the show.
We also have t-shirts for sale in our store at feastoffun.com/store. If you're a hunty t-shirt or you're not shaving, gives me more time for misbehaving.
I want to thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. Tomorrow, Muffy Fish Basket joins in to talk about the must-have Halloween costumes of this year and some ghoulish mistakes you don't want to make for All Hallows Eve.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.